whoa, yeah, we are in the place to be.
Hi and welcome to What's Next. I'm Therese, your host, and I was trained to be an architect, I work as an architect, and I started this podcast to talk about what's next in the fields of architecture, design and technology, facing topics such as climate change, artificial intelligence, and where humanity's place is in this fast-moving world. I hope you enjoy this week's episode, so have fun listening.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to do this interview with me. Please introduce yourself and the studio. Who are you?
Well, hello, and thank you for the invitation. We are a young office founded by Fanny and myself in Geneva, Switzerland.
And I'm Fanny, and what I can also add is we had also diverse experience as architects, either in London or in Geneva, and now together we are trying to combine all our experiences in these two different countries, and also from our own culture, French and Portuguese.
And why Switzerland?
Well, the straight answer is that both me and Fanny, we came to Switzerland straight after school. So we met here, and somehow we enjoyed our time practicing architecture in Swiss offices, and at a certain point we realized that we had the opportunity to start a small office with two small projects that we are actually finishing now, and we said to ourselves, why not try take these opportunities and try to build something. And I also would say that I did my Erasmus in Lausanne, in EFL. And well, Fanny can also tell something about it, but she did her Erasmus in Holland and worked in Chile. So somehow we are not that attached to our origin countries, and we found our space or our opportunity here, and we decided to take it.
But that's exciting.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. And as I heard before, it also goes really well. But yeah. Before we come to this, I have a little warm-up, some warm-up questions for you, to get to know the people that I'm interviewing a little better from their private side. So first question, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
I could say both. First, maybe to be classic, the mint tea. I'm really a fan of mint tea. And less conventional, champagne is my favorite alcoholic drink.
Good combination.
Yeah, I didn't used to drink what the drink I'm about to say, but in recent times I don't drink it a lot, but I find it really good since we did a travel to Scotland together, and actually it's whiskey, a good glass of whiskey on Friday after a week of work, it's can be quite enjoyable.
Yeah, in front of a really nice fireplace.
Exactly.
If you could develop a skill overnight, what would you wish for? It can be anything.
Now we have a lot of work, sometimes we dream about reading more, that we don't have much time. So for me, it would be drawing, reading at the same time would be amazing.
Yeah, I would actually join funny on this one. Not just reading, but if we could draw and see a painting at the same time, which actually sometimes is possible, because while you are working, sometimes you just take the time to see a painting and or a sculpture or whatever, just to find inspiration or to discuss some ideas. So that would be quite a good skill, that what Fanny is suggesting.
I haven't heard this one before. Most of the time I hear time traveling, flying, yeah, magic, this. But this, your wish is something that would calm me also down. Like, not to put even more pressure on top of the workplace.
Exactly.
What's your favorite hobby besides architecture?
For me, it would be dance.
Any dance or special dance? Tango.
Well, I used to practice a lot of contemporary dance.
That's nice. I tried to do a dance class one time and I couldn't follow the steps. So then it was done for me.
For me, it's really to just go out of the office, and because we are in a nice spot in Geneva, full of galleries. So I just sometimes in the weekend or even during the week in lunchtime, go and see a nice painting in a gallery. It can be quite inspiring and relaxing.
Also really nice. So, you are a young architecture office. What's your philosophy?
Yeah, that's quite a question. I don't know if like we have a proper philosophy. It would seem a bit pretentious to say we have one. But when we found the office, one of the things that we spoke together and that I think we immediately start to develop in our project was the relation with nature. So try to understand that architecture can establish a lot of relationships to nature or to the outside world, and which can be complementary, which can be in contrast, whatever. It's a vast field, and we would say something about what we've been doing would be that we really try to establish meaningful relation between architecture and nature, and this can happen everywhere. It can happen in a site where the nature is very present, but it can also happen in the city, and this without denying the architectural form and the architectural language. So really this combination is what keeps us awake and inspired to work.
Nature is one of my favorite topics in terms of architecture, but we will get to this later. And now I would like to know, how do you start? Do you have a set of rules that you stick to, or everybody, you go in one room, she goes in another room, and then you read and you make your own thoughts and then you come back together, or how do you start?
I think we don't work separately. We work together. First, maybe observing the sites, the context, the plans or the existing plans that we have for a project. And I can't say we establish a set of rules. We have no rules that we stick to. We mostly have themes that we like to discuss about. And the beginning of a project, it starts from what we've seen, what we observe, and then we speak together around themes that we think are relevant to the project?
Yeah, it's, I mean, this question is we don't think a lot about that, you know. It's not a conscious question, but we sometimes when we look back to the beginning of the project, like when you open the office cabinet and you see all the first models and first reference, etc., we realize that in a repetitive way, we always collect a series of artifacts like of that relate to the site, like photos that we've made, also old plans, or sometimes even conversations. For instance, now we are starting a project, and one landscape architect, his father was at a concrete company, the most important concrete company in Geneva, and he told us that in this project, the company of his father did the concrete, and the concrete is quite special. So he spent 15 minutes explaining us how they developed the concrete. And this immaterial thing we keep with us, and we already made reference to that in presentations of the project and in the process a few times. So there is this like observations or collection of things that surround the site. And then there is what Fanny said about the themes that we developed, like more about of our agenda. For instance, what we just discussed about relation to nature, or also figurative architecture is something that we discuss a lot. And then I have to say that there is also all the things that cross your mind in between, like outside of the office, when you come to work, or when we go to a meeting, etc. And I think we shouldn't underestimate that, because in those spaces between things, we actually think about references or about ideas, maybe an idea that we couldn't develop in another project. So the beginning is quite a travel between an agenda, stuff that we find for the first time, and the things that cross our mind.
And then you start with the 2D, with the pen and the white paper, or do you start modeling immediately something to have some mass model for the construction side? Or is it just first the white sheet of paper?
It really depends, I think.
Yeah, it depends, and it's a bit both at the same time.
Yeah, but we start with analog stuff. We never start with the... We start with either a conversation, a drawing with pencil, or a model normally comes a bit after. But yeah, I think sketching and talk is really the way that we start.
And is there something or somehow something or someone in the architectural world who inspires you?
You mean in the,
for example, nature, or like the concrete firm, or is there someone that you really, that you think, no, he always has great ideas, she always has great ideas, maybe they have something done before and we see it as an example?
I mean, of course, there are a lot of people and a lot of things that inspire us, but well, since we would like to answer you and to choose two or three, we always start our presentations with a painting by Peter Doig of a canoe in a lake. And this painting, for instance, it's always telling us something. So it's a painting that is both, it relates both to the figurative tradition and to the abstract tradition of painting. It's a painting that you can clearly see as something that relates to the language of painting and to the tradition of painting, and at the same time relates to nature because it's a landscape painting. But at the same time, in the center of the painting, it portrays a canoe, so a very emblematic figure. And actually, this figure is the key to understand the whole painting, to understand the reflections, etc. So, yeah, outside of architecture, in the art world, we can find ideas that are actually crossing the present time and our culture, and that is very inspiring. Like to make a step back from architecture and see what are the themes of today, or the themes for some people that are working also in the cultural field. And then there is an architect that we discuss a lot, which is Schinkel. So you might know because you were born in the same country.
Yes.
And Schinkel, we find it very inspiring because it's an architect that, yeah, it has a strong relation to architecture as a discipline and a language. So themes like proportion, rhythm, elements are very rich in his architecture, but sometimes it's really surprising to open the complete works of Schinkel, and which is this book that he made with the no photos, just the 3D drawings and plans, and sometimes mixed up in the same page. And see how his projects relate to the environment as a whole. So this relation with the outside world that we've been talking about, and it's almost infinite, no? The relationships that he can establish with what is surrounding the building, but without denying the building as a figure on its own,
mm-hmm.
and its autonomy and the love for architecture. So yeah. We always make reference to this painting and several projects of Schinkel, and yeah, this book that he made that we find really amazing.
And you said to take a step back, then you see the picture clearer. And I have a question. Are you in this really fast moving world actually able to take a step back when there are expectations because of your phone that you have to be available 24/7, then you have to worry about climate change, then about world hunger, then you see the Instagram pages full of very nice renderings and you compare yourself the whole time, and then at some point there comes up a feeling of like you feel overwhelmed. Do you know this feeling? And in case yes, what do you do against this?
We feel very overwhelmed, especially now at the beginning of our office with two construction work at the same time. It's really demanding in terms of time. But we try to always think what is the most important thing in the project, what is the project and what we want to really concentrate on, to really focus on what is important and why there is this rush running after me. I don't want to be stressed by this, and want to mm-hmm. concentrate on the good decision for the project. And on the other part of the question, that was related more to the social networks, for this, I don't feel a lot of pressure, or that's something that doesn't really influence me in the day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but this question of, for instance, the relation between architecture and Instagram, which I think is quite a specific one, because all of a sudden, before the main way to show your work was the website, but maybe now we are realizing that with Instagram it's much easier. And I have to say that, of course there is this pressure, but at the same time, I think in the architectural world, at least the one where we move, the people that we follow, etc. I think it's still a healthy one. I don't see these problems that we are discussing in the journals about other fields. I don't see them as frequent on Instagram relating to architecture. Maybe they will come, but I still think that it's nice to share our work on Instagram, to see the work of other people. And actually, if you take it easy, it can be a very positive thing. At least I learn personally every day by seeing other Instagram accounts of other architectural offices, and I wouldn't like to make a problem of that. I would rather stay with a positive feeling.
No, what is good about it and how we take it, the Instagram, our relation to Instagram is take the good or what we like and appreciate the new image or the new project that we see, and on our part show really what pleases us about our work. And I think if you take it like this easily,
It's a really healthy opinion and point of view. If we come back to the topic nature, what importance has nature in your projects in terms of climate change? Do you work with special materials, or how do you do? Or is the design a special one that you don't need all those technic things like air condition? What do you do?
So before speaking too rapidly about climate change, like we our projects are, we can speak or not about them more in detail after, but the relation to nature is quite essential to us. But we felt connected to this team way before the climate change being an emergency as it is now. I mean, if we knew before, we would say that is an emergency for at least 70 years. Let's say that it has been categorized as an emergency in the last 10 years. And before that, we already felt connected with nature, because we think just it's the richest relation that architecture can establish beyond just the relation to the human being. So the relation to the nature is the relation between architecture as a stable thing and nature as something that changes with the seasons, with the cycles of light, etc. It's also the relation between, most of the time, interior and exterior. And sometimes by using nature, you can manipulate these spatial ideas about interior and exterior. It's also, even in a city, it's like a window. It's what connects the architecture to the air and to the sun. So, the relation to nature is crucial. And on top of that, of course, there is this climate change issue, which is, yeah, it's, we are, I think we are all realizing collectively that it's quite something that that we need to address. And the way me and Fanny worked with this question since the beginning of the office, and maybe it's better to give a concrete example. For instance, we were asked to develop a gardener's house, which is a maintenance pavilion for a park in the new neighborhood in, in Geneva. And the way the client asked us to develop this project was really to think of a building, a maintenance pavilion, and nothing else. And the first step that we took towards the project was to realize that there was a forest there before, and the forest was demolished to build architecture, that the building was not planned in the neighborhood, so it was a new heating island, etc. And actually, yeah, we could just do the building, but we knew, because we have authorities that we need to speak to, we had the municipality that was our client, etc. And we made this decision of saying we are doing a building plus an exterior space surrounded by nature. And this was a clairière, a clearing, as a space that relates to the forest. And then the building comes as a complement to this clearing, to this forest clearing. And at the same time, we are making architecture, because the form of the building is quite emblematic in relation to this clearing. It also relates to some examples in the history of architecture, Palladio or Alvar Aalto. While doing this decision, we are actually not solving one thing. We are. It's much bigger than that. We are trying to engage everyone in the project, including ourselves, the client, and everyone else. And that's a bit the way we see it, the relation to the climate change. It's not to try to choose one material that is sustainable, but really try to see it as a whole. And by doing that, what is curious is that we did what we thought was the best thing for the place, and in relation to issues of climate change also. And by doing that, the authorities understood that we didn't need photovoltaic panels. So they excused us from that, because they understood that it didn't make anything. It was ridiculous, the amount of energy that we would accumulate with that. And instead of that, we have natural light on the roof, so we don't need to use as much artificial light, etc. So it's like we don't see it as a problem to solve, but as a project, the whole project as one thing, and that can engage with different aspects and excuse ourselves from maybe things that are not that relevant.
Yeah, but that's true. If you put more thought in your design, then maybe you can stop putting all this technology inside and outside your building. Sometimes not necessary, yes.
Yeah, I hope I was clear. It was a bit long, but yeah.
No, it was really clear.
Yeah.
You said instead of using just one material, but how do you feel about taking nature as a role model, and you create in the laboratory some natural building element, like from the shell of a crabs?
um, for the same, maybe I could answer with the same, in the continuity of what you go explain for this project, the gardener's house. So we had this idea of a house for the gardeners that are keeping the site. And since the beginning, our idea was to also build for them a house that was an in between an exterior and an interior. There was always this ambiguity in the project, and we thought that the walls really had, the internal walls really had an importance in the project, and the brick came as an evidence for the mm-hmm. for the construction of the walls, and somehow bricks are, well, it's a natural material that we used to build finally all the project, and it came just by the story of what
we developed
all around the project. And for us, it was this in between the environmental idea mm-hmm. of the whole project and how we build it, as well as for the environment and for the clearance of the project. So I could say
that's exactly, I would say the same, which is we tried to, you mentioned the idea of taking a step back. Actually, that's a bit what we try to do, is to, because to be very pragmatic, sometimes you are in a meeting and you have an engineer that tells you you should do this because it's the best way to assure this technical thing and be sustainable at the same time. But if you make a step back and you try to make a story for the project, that what Fanny was saying, that is coherent and at the same time integrating strategically. So we knew that we couldn't do this building in concrete. It would never mm-hmm. go through with the clients, etc. But we could do it in a lot of materials. You could do it in timber, we could do it in earth, we could do it in bricks of earth with bricks like okay. we did clay. So we try to do this step back, is to know what the requirements are, but then try to be free on the conceptual level, and when we arrive to the discussions we are already protected somehow from the aggressions of engineers and authorities. I give you an example. For instance, in this new project, that this competition that you mentioned, we have a special committee which is called ECHO 21. So you can just by the name understand what they are there for, and they are very, it's really interesting conversations. But through these observations, well, actually how the project started, so we made a natural atlas, a natural history of the site. So there is a river that runs on the underground of the site. There is a forest. Yeah, by coincidence, we always get sites where a forest was before. So yeah. There was a forest there. And we made a kind of natural history in a form of atlas. And we present that and we said, okay, the themes of the project are going to be this. It's not going to be another theme related to climate change or sustainability. It's going to be these themes that are already enough. And then it's water and the forest. So by saying that, immediately the authority that takes care of the forest said to us, we're going to need a humid zone for the forest. So you can take the water from your roofs, you can make a pass mm-hmm. to give water to your vegetation inside the site, and then the end point can be this humid zone in the forest. And all of a sudden, we are not taking care about just the building, but we are taking care of a site, of a natural site. And that for us, it's really nice because nobody forces us to do something. They are with us. They are excited that an architect is developing those things, and they think it's already enough. So they are not adding points which are not coherent with the project. They are just trying to make the points that we bring up the most worth developing. So, yeah.
But that's really interesting. And I think more people should think and create like this.
Well, it's nice.
Now we will do the opposite of taking a step back. We will look into the future. And I would like to know, how do you imagine the future living and working space?
Yeah, so yeah, I guess your question comes from COVID times, no? Where this discussion was...
Yeah, but also from movies. I don't know if you've seen the movie Ready Player One.
No.
No.
No? It's horrible because everybody just stays at home in little concrete boxes with their little glasses on, and they just live their life through an avatar in their magical world.
Yeah.
Do you think we will end up like this?
No, I really don't think so. Yeah, I think, again, what I saw from after, well, during COVID and after COVID, at least we can only speak of what we see. No, I cannot speak in, I don't know, what is happening in the United States. So I'm just speaking of what I see here in Geneva. And yeah, we have some friends that work in banking, and they spend most of their times now working at home. So we had a client which actually was a friend and is a friend, and we were doing the project during these times, and he was always at home because he was working from home. And but in architecture, what I saw is that people try to work remotely, but everyone really wants to come back to the office and have contact with colleagues and to do a physical model and to do a sketch with the six hands, you know, three people around the sketch, etc. So I think, yeah, that will never disappear.
No, and also in the housing culture, well, also from what we see here in Switzerland, I believe that it's the other way around, that there is a lot of new ways of living that are appearing, like there are more and more cooperatives, projects, collective mixed housing with activities or work maybe into the housing blocks. And I feel this is the other way around. It's really more and more creating a mixed relation between living and working activities than it used to be in the past. In the past, where housing was really, somehow really determined by a perimeter, the house or the apartments. And here, from what we experience here in Switzerland, and also I feel it's the case in France too, even in other countries, that the relation are really becoming more complex in housing.
I think we are quite convinced that the way to go forward is to share.
Yeah,
it's not to be in your own room, but to share more and more. And the way you share actually is the challenge, no? What is collective and what is private, because I think we also don't believe that everything can be collective. And these ideas in housing are very evident. No, what is the size of your apartment? No, if it's a small, the your apartment is the smallest possible, and then you share as much as possible. Or if your apartment is just normal, but then the sharing space is really special and it's just one room where people come together. I think this, or maybe the sharing is on the way to your home, no? But it can also be the natural space, no? The sharing, it can be, yeah, the how do you share is actually the question. It's not how do you not share.
Yeah. I feel that too.
I don't know if it's what you were talking about or what you were asking.
Yeah, this is what I was asking. And now I would like to know, is it possible to work remote for your office? Or you say, no, sorry, you have to come.
Well, we did. Huh?
It's possible.
It's to work remotely?
Yeah, I mean, the last... So now we are four at the office,
mm-hmm.
but just like this summer, we had an intern that worked from Milano.
Ah, yeah, that sense, yeah. I would have said no instinctively because...
No. Fanny's going against her own decisions in the past.
No, but I was in the continuity of the discussion, maybe to what COVID brought, and we lived the COVID period really differently. We didn't stop going to the office, but we are, maybe it's different because we are a small office, so we try to really continue as if it was, as if nothing was happening. And in that sense, I would have said no. But it's true that we manage to work with other people remotely, and it's something we do quite often. Also, in different countries like England or Portugal, we work with designers or photographers. We try to encourage that, so I would say maybe yes and no. Different.
What I also think is that just trying to take the positive, this what happened with COVID of like doing these meetings online, etc. It really helped on our side to share more actually. So. Sometimes things that seem not possible, like to have a designer in Portugal or discussion with a company that does handles in England, for instance, that just recently we had a meeting. It's all of a sudden seems easier, and actually it can also help us to share more, but it doesn't substitute, of course, the basis of physical presence. And to come back to that, the basis of the office would always be the physical presence, but it's not forbidden to be at distance if it works.
Okay. Because I have a lot of friends who just look for jobs that are remote based. And then, sometimes I can understand that you need this freedom that you could decide, who knows if you actually will disappear or if you come back, probably if you have the opportunity to completely disappear. At some point, you just want to go to the office.
Yeah.
But I think that you have the decision.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We agree. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, it's important to have the choice. Yeah.
Then we arrive to the last question. What means architecture for you personally?
Okay. Yeah. that's a, it's like what's your philosophy? It's quite
yes.
but I would say that I see architecture as a form of expression, and therefore, for me, architecture is the way I express the way I see life in general. But having said that, I think, you know, this story, this very known story of Mies van der Rohe, who made modern architecture and lived in a bourgeois interior. I think architecture is also the space to experiment, and it can also be a contradiction with the way you live. But actually, that is the, for me, architecture is that, is this tension between a form of expression of how you see things, and also how can you experiment and propose something else. Same. And since we share more than just the office space, because we are partners in life also, I think that is also quite healthy to just to express ourselves, but to keep a distance and also be open to contradiction, which actually is a beautiful architectural idea.
Yes, but sometimes it's hard to work with your partner, or it's perfect. It's the perfect match.
No, I think we are quite complementary. Yeah. And we like to complete ourselves in how we think the project and how we imagined the spaces, and how also for us it's all about how we experiment space and the sites, and I think for that we are quite complementary.
Perfect. That's the perfect sentence to end the interview. So thank you very much for your time and the interesting interview.
Thank you,
Teresa, and we wish you the great success in your
Oh, thank you.
This was this week's episode. We really hope you liked it as much as we did. If you have comments, suggestions, critic, please let us know. And till next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao.